Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game, and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court strike.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Skyhook up. Win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fadeaway.
Giants for the win.
Bang! James puts up the three.
Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And last night, an impressive collection of fans, celebrities, former beloved Knicks, and white-collar criminals assembled in Madison Square Garden to watch Game 3. And what a game it was of a great series so far, one that the Spurs desperately needed to win. And they did. They went up early in the first quarter by double digits. But then a 42-22 second quarter by the Knicks flipped the game. They've been dominant in that second quarter so far. But then the Spurs defense, I thought, really took over in that second half. And for the first time in a very long time, D made the Knicks offense look mortal and snapped their 13 game. What an incredible winning streak for the Knicks to be able to win 13 in a row in the playoffs. But this is after the Knicks win both on the road. A home team has yet to win a game in the finals so far. And the Spurs needed that one last night in game two. Obviously, Spurs had the big comeback at the end, but then Wemby had the turnover, sort of reminiscent of the Jabari Smith Jr. turnover to Marcus Smart in game three of the series against Houston, then missed a potential game tying shot to send it to OT. Knicks pulled away at the end of game one. We've got some catching up to do, D, on a great, great series so far. What were your thoughts both last night from Madison Square Garden and on the series overall?
Yeah, the series continues because if San Antonio loses game three, the series is functionally over, regardless of how good of a team they are. And they're a very good team in a series, which I think they found some things in game three. If they lose that game, I don't think it matters ultimately, because the Knicks just have to win a single contest, and there are so many different pathways to getting a single win, even in a playoff game, that would have functionally been it. And so I thought San Antonio made some good adjustments, and I thought that they turned the screws on the things that were already working for them and turned them a little bit more tightly to squeeze a little bit more out of that stuff. And I ended up getting them a win. I actually didn't think the Knicks played particularly well in game three in ways that weren't all related to how well the Spurs played. I actually thought that the crowd and sort of the atmosphere was good, but not great, considering the hype that was heading into how on fire New York was going to be.
And that was why it was so important. Spurs went up like 7-0 right away, and they had a big first quarter. That was a tidal wave sort of waiting to be unleashed, and I thought the Spurs did a great job of preventing it from ever sort of cresting in the first place, because it felt like it had that energy, but they dispersed it pretty quickly.
One of the things that the Spurs have done all playoffs, Pete, is when their backs are against the wall, they come out swinging. And they come out with a level of execution and shot making that I think is actually even a notch above what their natural talent or ability actually is. Castle raining threes and like every Wemby shot going in. Wemby's obviously capable of making those shots, but when he's on in that specific way, there is an inevitability to him and to the team.
Unstoppable.
That feels very difficult to overcome.
But this is a good point in that one of the things that stood out to me of watching these games so far is that the Spurs are just holding on for dear life from a jump shooting talent standpoint. Like, the Knicks are clearly a better shot-making jump shooting team than the Spurs are. So when the Spurs do come out and they are hitting their threes, that's when they can really take over. Or conversely, in that fourth quarter, both teams missed their first 16 shots combined from three. I think they went like 1-for-17, 1-for-18 combined in the quarter from three. So when that levels out, the Spurs, I think, are a little bit better, but the rest of the series, it's really, I thought that's one of the things that's really shown through is every time the Knicks are just a little bit open, they've been knocking those down. That was less of the case last night.
It wasn't the case at all, really.
OG basically was the main dude who was knocking down tough shots, but yeah.
The number of open threes that Landry Shamet got, and Josh Hart was hitting threes too at the start, but the number of open threes that Landry Shamet got, or even like the couple of threes that Deuce McBride took. These were pretty good looks, and they just didn't fall for them. I thought the open looks that Brunson got, he hit one spot up three, I think, from the right wing, but he's not getting a lot of open looks, but the ones that he got, they didn't necessarily go in at the rate they needed to go in. And I thought Towns never really got into a very good rhythm. One of the reasons why I brought up the crowd earlier is that I actually thought from a desperation standpoint, you knew the Spurs were going to be as desperate as ever. Really, all the Knicks had to do was come close to that level and that crowd would carry them past. And I actually thought at the very beginning of the game, San Antonio shot making deflated the Knicks a little bit, and their inability to hit shots leveled out the Knicks in a way that put them behind the eight ball. That massive run they made in the second quarter was great, but I said this online at halftime that I think San Antonio should be both encouraged and discouraged. They found a lot of stuff that worked. They went up big, and then they found themselves down 7 at the half. And so from a mentality standpoint, I was going to be very interested to see how they came out of halftime. Because if they lean too much into the shit, where did our lead go? What happened to this game? They could have become a bit crestfallen. And I think the Knicks could have really stolen the momentum completely in their direction. Instead, the Knicks came out right away in the third quarter in a very similar way that they came out to start the game. And I think that that hard reset of the game ultimately won them the game. Mm-hmm. Also, like the sort of fourth quarter and second half officiating of the game being called much tighter. Mm-hmm. I thought that that did more of a disservice to the Knicks than it did the Spurs, if that makes sense.
The Spurs were in the bonus with 7 minutes left, 7.5 minutes left in the third quarter, and 8 minutes left in the fourth.
Pete, they committed three fouls in the first minute of the fourth quarter. It was like 10:56, and they had committed their third foul, and their fourth foul came not soon after. In the end, it was just like, okay, well, they're going to be shooting free throws for like 10 minutes here if they just draw another foul. They didn't draw a foul for like another minute and a half. But to your point, 8 minutes of every foul being a free throw is huge. And the Spurs hit them. There were a few points throughout the game where they weren't making their free throws, but in the fourth quarter, it was like they were nails. And whether it was Castle or Wemby, they hit those shots. Tactically, Pete, the thing that stood out most to me was the, I don't even want to call it an adjustment, but more just a point of emphasis, is that the Spurs went to a bunch of pick and roll with Wemby as the screener, and he just decided, I'm going to stand in here and just set this screen. I'm not going to slip out. I'm not going to try to roll quickly. I'm going to set a screen. I'm going to knock the defender off, and then I'm going to get into my role. And I thought over and over and over again, every single time that he made contact, the Spurs got something good out of that. Either he got rolling to the basket, they forced a switch, the other guard or the guard who was attacking got to play against Towns in either a drop or in that switch environment. And I thought that that really opened up San Antonio's offense in a way where they found much more stability on that side of the ball, Pete. That to me, I know that you were talking about the Knicks defense sort of floundering the most it has this series against the Spurs defense, but I actually thought it was these minor adjustments that the Spurs made offensively that gave them the foothold in the game that allowed them to say, no, we can go back to this and this is going to work over and over and over again. And then with the shot making that they had, it was curtains for New York.
Yeah, that adjustment with Wemby rolling hard to the rim, setting the good screen and then rolling hard, it put a collective pressure on the rim that, like, Castle, for example, was complimenting that. He had, I think, three overhand layups for and ones where he was putting pressure on the rim. I thought they were going faster, too, like going up against the Knicks set defense less often and really kind of zipping up the sidelines on their sideline break and getting early opportunities out of that. But totally agree with your point that rather than picking and popping like he was a lot in that first couple of games, he'd been rolling harder to the rim and getting those opportunities over the top. And he just has the coolest lobs. Like, he... his tip-ins, because he doesn't jump super high, but he's has such crazy dimensions that he will like tip or guide the ball in almost. It's not even a tip, really, that in a different way than really any player I've seen. Let's go to break here. Come back. Keep talking about the finals. And then a couple listeners made some good observations about our Rui conversation yesterday that I want to get into that as well.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
One thing, D, I was laughing while watching that big second quarter from the Knicks as Josh Hart and Jordan Clarkson are balling out, you know, thinking of our old conversations. We've been doing this almost 10 years now and seeing them do their thing. I don't think it's a coincidence that they're doing it for a big market team, too. I think certain guys have a big market hoops type of mentality that JC is never going to be afraid to get a shot up. And he had a couple of big hoops in that run as well. Thought Jose Alvarado was really good and has been in a couple of games as well, which is interesting, too, because the last couple of years between him, McConnell, Pritchard, there have been these guards that have historically been, oh, you're under the height limit for what can compete in the finals level type of competition, who've actually been really good, these feisty defensive type of guards, that Alvarado fits into that mold as well. And I thought he's been really good in that series. And so it's been interesting seeing the Knicks counterpunch with their bench, with their speed. And that second quarter has been something they've been really good at throughout the series. What have been your thoughts? I've talked so much about the starting five and that closing five and that main group that they have, but their depth has been really good. You were calling a Deuce McBride, a little Vinny Johnson the other day, throwback, a great bench player for the old Detroit Pistons. But what have you thought about their bench groups?
The thing about the bench for the Knicks that stands out most to me is their understanding of what their respective jobs are, their collective jobs are, and the confidence that they're imbued with from having the sort of leeway that they have to play their respective games and not be looking over their shoulder that someone else is going to come in and replace me. Jordan Clarkson has been a less used reserve throughout basically the entire second half of the season. Like he had a bigger role earlier in the year, but after the trade for Alvarado and sort of the shift, the Knicks went away from Clarkson. They went away from Tyler Kolek. They really just leaned into the McBride, Shamit, and then even Alvarado was sort of, oh, you're sort of in the rotation, but not all of the way in the rotation after the trade deadline. And the confidence that McBride and Shamit have particularly, and then Mitchell Robinson really being a, this is what I do on an every play basis. I'm going to screen hard. I'm going to roll hard. And then I'm going to get to the offensive glass. Everything that they do is very well defined and intentional within the context of like what their coach wants from them. And their confidence to go out there and say, nope, I'm going to guard the ball. And then on offense, I'm going to be fearless, essentially. And I actually thought some of the shot-making woes from Shamit and McBride and Alvarado, that did the Knicks in to a certain extent. Like they didn't have the same shot-making ability that they had earlier in the series, and that cost them, basically. But in games one and two, I've been super impressed just with these guys' ability to go in and say, things I'm asked to do fall very much in line with what my natural skill set is, and I'm empowered to go out and do those things. And so I've never seen Deuce McBride take a tough jumper off the dribble or otherwise and give a look to the bench like, am I going to come out because I missed that, right? Or I've never seen Alvarado mix it up with someone and be like, oh, am I doing the right thing? Like, no, you're doing exactly what you were brought in here to do. And it plays to these guys' natural games. And I think it's to the credit of the head coach, but also the construction of the team to say, our collective identity is this, and we got players that fit those things, and the coach is empowering them to then go out and do it. And it all sort of fits together neatly in this great puzzle that's already completed. And it's no wonder that they're a great team in that way, Pete.
Yes, very well said. And that empowerment component can allow players to, I think, be a little better in the elements that are not natural parts of their games. Like one of the great credits to their coaching staff, I think, is the buy-in from both Shamit and Clarkson on the defensive end. It's more prevalent with Shamit because he gets bigger minutes, but he's been tremendous. Every time I've watched him this year, he's been really good on the defensive end relative to his capabilities, you know, and getting that out of those type of players is super important. And that's where I want to shift gears a little bit, D, to Rui. You were talking about putting guys in natural roles. A couple of our listeners, led by my guy LZ Hunter, aka Official Prota, longtime listener, right, all the way back to the beginning, brought up a very valid point that I wanted to talk to you about, sort of put a pin on the discussion that we had yesterday with Rui, which is that essentially Rui has played a good portion of his Lakers tenure out of position defensively, whether it's been in the LeBron and AD era, even with the LeBron and Luka era. There have been two forwards, or in AD's case, a big, that have demanded, like, I'm not going to be guarding the highest intensity player on the other team defensively. And therefore, if you're going to play and be in this lineup, Rui, that's going to be your job. And is the guy you're guarding a small forward or sometimes even a shooting guard? Yeah, but we need you to do that. And so in the context of Rui's defense and how much he can provide on that end, I'm curious about that question, how you view that, D, because one of the options that the Lakers have on the table is, even if LeBron walks, is to sort of bring back a lot of the same guys. And you could argue the Lakers have their power forward. He just never got to play very much power forward in the LeBron and the Luka era and all of that. And that if LeBron walks, you could put Rui into that spot and then spend a lot of that money in at other positions to be better there. So what say you to that idea that, you know, Rui has been playing a good deal out of position?
Oh, I think it's perfectly fair and valid. It's also, though, the natural ramifications of the roster that you've built. How to put this nicely. Rui is put in positions where he has to be sort of the sacrificial lamb in certain positions. But I also wonder how much that's going to change, even if like LeBron is the only player that's out, right? And so one of the things that I talked to you a ton about in last offseason was who can Luka capably guard? And in all of the, he's lost weight and he's going to be in better physical condition. One of the bigger questions I had was, well, can he defend shooting guards? Can he defend small forwards? Or is he going to have to defend sort of like a bigger forward or someone who is less of a threat offensively? It turns out the Lakers switched 1 through 4 so much that it ultimately didn't matter who Luka could or could not guard. He ended up on whatever player the other team decided he was going to defend just by using Luka's guy in ball screens. But Rui is in an interesting position in that the Lakers are switching so much 1 through 4 that he's also going to end up in spots, Pete, where I would argue that his lack of defensive versatility is sort of what does him in within this context. That if he only had to defend power forwards, I would probably be pretty happy overall with what his defensive ability is. But the scheme and the style that the Lakers play doesn't quite allow for that. And then when you add in the personnel challenges with Luka and LeBron, or even in the past where it was like LeBron and AD, and then more traditional guards, whether it be like whoever it was, right? It was Taurean Prince who has to guard this sort of guy, or Austin or D'Lo that has to guard this sort of guy. Rui was left with the, no, man, you get to guard Kawhi Leonard tonight. You get to guard Kevin Durant tonight. You get to guard whoever the best sort of guy is. That's on you here.
And Luka still ain't going to guard that guy either going forward.
I don't think that's fair to Rui. I also don't know, though, if saying, well, that's not fair, because some of it's not fair because he's not good enough at it to have to do it. But if he's going to play in those groups, you need someone who's good enough to do it. And so I think it's sort of flawed on both sides of the equation, if that makes sense.
It does. Let's go to break here, come back and keep talking about that.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game, and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
My thought on Prota's argument is that, yes, of course, Rui has been sort of the sacrificial defender and playing out of position a decent amount. And that's part of the reason why I don't use a lot of numbers in the argument against Rui, even though you can from a plus-minus net rating type of standpoint. Of the players that played in all 10 games in the playoffs, he had the lowest plus-minus of any of the players. Austin had the lowest overall, but he only played in the OKC games and then two of the Houston games. And same was true with the starting lineup, right, that we started earlier in the year. That was way more about him being way out of place than it was something deficient about him. I wouldn't expect a player his size to be able to essentially be your starting two guard. It was basically his role in that group. And it's no surprise that it didn't work. That said, your point about Luka and how he's built, weight loss or otherwise, both guys kind of have heavy feet. They're big guys. They're big forwards. They're not the long, lanky Peyton Watson type of guy that is skinny but can get up and down the court, both in a straight line but laterally as well. And so I think it's more scheme independent than we switch a lot, and that can bring out some difficulties. I actually wonder to what degree the frequency of us switching was just is what we got to do with the guys that we have. And if we had a more balanced roster, I'm curious if Redick does that to the same degree. But like we were talking about yesterday, in whatever offense that you run, you're going to end up in the blender and you're going to defensively have to rotate out of that. And I just think that the level of ability to rotate out, recover back between Luka and Rui. Like, Luka makes up for it a bit with anticipation and processing speed, but he doesn't have the feet to be able, and that's why offensive players will ideally, from their perspective, pull him out to the perimeter and try to beat him off the dribble. I do think you kind of have to have one of your forwards at least being able to move their feet well.
Yeah, and this is why I've argued that one of the Lakers' big free agent needs is this player who's a great front court player, right? Who can sort of take on some of these responsibilities. It also falls back into the idea of like, well, who's Luka going to guard on a possession-to-possession basis or in a game-to-game basis? And are the Lakers ever going to be able to say, well, no, we're not going to switch as much because we trust these guys to play within the context of their scheme? The Knicks don't have switch personnel in terms of Brunson and Cat, so they don't want to switch. Two of their best offensive players are guys who you don't want them to have to do it at all. To Luka's credit, he is a big enough and strong enough perimeter-based player where he's not as small as Brunson. He's not as big as Cat. So he's got more versatility just built into his frame than these sort of like positional outlier guys where it's just like, well, you're not a small guard or you're not a center. But even with Luka, the Lakers being able to go back and say, well, no, like we trust you to get over screens. We trust you to do X, Y, and Z. We trust you to stay in front, to recover, and to sort of avoid those blender situations based off of like our help and recover rather than the peel switching or the outright switching in order to stay in front. These are things Luka's got to improve at as well if the Lakers are going to be more scheme divergent and not have to switch as much as they do, particularly 1 through 4. And so in recentering Rui within this conversation, Rui also needs those same things to be true. And he needs those things to be true for everyone else on the roster as well. And I'd love for Rui to be able to say like, well, no, you get to guard the other team's power forward as much as possible. Even if that guy's a tricky matchup for you, these other things are going to be true enough where these guys can contain their own position and defend their own position, where we're not exposing you to have to do all of these different things throughout the course of a game. And I do think that that's one way for Rui to be better defensively. But let's be real. Take LeBron out of the mix. Austin, Luka, Rui, Marcus, and let's like say even Ayton or Jackson, Rui's probably the fifth best defender out of all of those players. So in any proposed starting lineup, I would argue from an individual defensive perspective, he's like the lowest of the proposed starting five, the proposed non-LeBron starting five. And I think that that's tricky when he's your essentially other defensive forward next to Luka.
At that point, you're basically arguing the same group minus LeBron. Like, do you turn LeBron into depth at that point? Like, hopefully you really improve your center spot. Is that the argument? Like, that five, just from a sheer talent standpoint, doesn't provide a particularly compelling, like, we could really go all the way if Rui just slid into that role type of thing. If we only upgraded our center and, you know, got a couple of bench guys, that's not how I view replacing LeBron ultimately.
No, and this is where the larger team building conversations matter, right? Because Rui is in a tricky situation when it comes to what his defensive ask is. And he's going to continue to be put into positions where he has to guard a guy who he's not necessarily as equipped to defend. To Rui's credit, I think from a team defensive perspective, he's gotten a lot better and he's way more understanding of where he needs to be, what his responsibilities are, what his rotations are. I trust him to lock in a little bit more. And I don't want to just hammer away at all the things that Rui doesn't do. But again, if he's your power forward, I also think then he needs to rebound better. If he's going to be around the basket more, like he needs to impact the defensive glass and have more rim protection to his game. He's shown that he can do some of these things, but what's Rui's career high in rebounding? Like, I'm not going to look it up, but if it were over 15, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, and he's going to average 4 boards a game, basically, tops.
Yeah,
you know, and
those are Jaren Jackson Jr. number.
Yes. Now, we've got one of the best rebounding forwards in the league in Luka Doncic. And
yes.
Rui can do a bunch of different roles on the defensive end, okay, and can knock down exactly the type of shots that Luka Doncic creates, and Luka can kind of cover for him on the boards. Making a bit of a devil's advocate argument here, but what say you about that idea? That, hey, you know, Luka kind of covers for you on the boards.
He does, and this is why in yesterday's pod, when I was just like, look, I would welcome Rui back. I do think, though, that he's a reserve.
Like, I do too on a title team, yes.
I just want to make sure that we're slotting everyone appropriately within the context of what their most ideal role is for a team that you hope can win the championship. But the same idea of, well, it's difficult to have LeBron and Austin and Luka all start because of the defensive challenges that come with those three players. It's just like, well, you can say the same thing starting just with like Luka and Austin, first of all. But you know how good the next forward has to be defensively for it to be like, no, we feel okay with these three guys. And honestly, like Rui doesn't pass that threshold.
It's part of the reason, too, though, I don't love starting out with Luka plus Austin, while still feeling that we have offensive needs, that we don't have quite enough shot creation there. But it also leans you more toward, like, you got to get those defensive guys to sort of make up for that. And you can lose guys that are good two-way players, but a little better on the offensive end, because it's like, well, did we really resolve the issue if it's now Luka and Austin and Rui instead of Luka, Austin, and LeBron? Like, I trust LeBron on defense in the biggest games more than I trust Rui, right? And so, like, did you really resolve the issue? So part of this to me comes back to that core issue of we need a certain type of talent now on the defensive end.
Yeah, and this is why I sort of chuckle at the idea of like, whoa, well, you can just build around Luka any way you want. He's Luka Doncic. He's great. And like, there's some truth to that, but it's not 100% true. Luka's going to be able to impact the defensive side of the ball in the very specific ways that he does. He's excellent on the defensive glass. He's going to be a good weak side player, an anticipatory player. He can take some charges. He's a big body dude that can switch onto post players. And he's got utility for sure.
Gets steals, a playmaker, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. All of the above. And I think Austin will get his nose dirty and stick his head in there and will take charges and will do a lot of stuff that's helpful as well. But to your point, when you were talking about Peyton Watson earlier, one of the things the Lakers don't have, and they don't have it with LeBron either because he's no longer this sort of defensive player, is the defensive ranginess that you typically ascribe to your forwards. And I just think that that's one of the key needs in terms of framing, like, what do you want for the Lakers' defense? It's like, well, I want more defensive range.
Mm-hmm. And that's that low man role a lot of times too. Sometimes it's going to be Luka on the other side, but it's important that the other guy is going to have some of that range that he can do some of the things that Luka can.
Yeah, like look at what Ananobi and Bridges do in terms of covering ground for the Knicks. The Lakers don't have nearly enough of that. They just don't. And even their best motor player who played a fair amount was Marcus, but Marcus is 6'3.5", 6'4". Like,
yeah, he built like a fire hydrant, right?
Yeah.
He's not rangy in the way that you mean, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, even if he's got the same body type as Ananobi, which is similar, I guess, Ananobi's like 4 or 5 inches taller and a much better athlete. And so circling back to like what we're learning from watching the finals and watching the Knicks play and even watching what San Antonio's done, there's a ranginess with their defensive players and a motor and an ability to get out higher on the floor while also then crashing back and impacting the backboards that the Lakers just need more of that. Luka can impact the backboards, and Austin can get out on the floor a little bit. Marcus can get out on the floor, but these are guards. And where are the forward size players or the wing size players that do this same stuff and do it with motor, who you're not relying on to be like 30 usage level players the way that like Luka is, or even Austin on a team where you're asking them to do as much ball handling as the Lakers are?
Yeah, I think the ability to cover ground on the defensive end is really important from that forward spot. But before we wrap up real quick, Elaine Shen got promoted to Chief Financial Officer of the Lakers. Super excited. I've talked a lot about the great people that do work at the Lakers that, you know, if you give them more resources, they would shine. Elaine's one of those great people. I'm so happy for her and want to thank the great Joe McCormick. He had been the Lakers CFO since 1988 and one of my favorite people in upper management with the Lakers. And he's going to stay around in an advisory role, but just thank you to Joe for the decades of service to the Lakers. And again, congrats to Elaine. We will be back tomorrow. I've got a couple of trade proposals I want to run your way. And then we've got the finals tomorrow night, big game 4. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it.
Bryant,
unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yeah. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bearers a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search the Great Bear Rescue to learn more.